You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans who are listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. To get this show every day, I need you to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Also, don't forget, get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Mets. On today's show, I want to talk about an agreement that the MLB and the MLBPA came to last week in regards to the coronavirus and how they will handle payment and service time due to this suspended or shortened season, or if the season gets canceled altogether. So I'll talk about that deal in the first half of the show. Then later on, I want to talk about Pete Alonso and if he may go through a sophomore slump if this season is played. Before any of that, though, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, check me out on Twitter, at FinkelsteinRyan. You can also find some of my writing about the Mets at MetsMerizedOnline.com. Now, it was Thursday evening that the MLB and the MLBPA announced an agreement on this coronavirus settlement, if you will, in regards to how they're going to pay the players during this unprecedented time. And I had actually already recorded a podcast for Friday, so I left it for today's show to talk about. And it is really interesting because basically right now, MLB owners are going to advance the players $170 million for April and May. If the season ends up being canceled rather than just delayed, the players will still keep that money. What that basically tells me is that Major League Baseball is now in a two-month waiting period where they're trying to figure out what they're going to do. They say that they will not play any games until all bans are released on mass gatherings that would prevent spectators from coming in, and that the travel restrictions and health restrictions have been lifted so it's safe for the players and everyone to resume a Major League Baseball season. But Tony Clark, the head of the Players Association, said that the players are willing to play in an empty stadium if possible, if that's something that makes things easier, that gets the season going. The bottom line is Major League Baseball is going to do everything they can to get as many games in this season as they can, because that's how everyone makes their money. And so if it is perfect scenario and they can play 120 games in front of fans and everything can go back to normal, of course they'll sign up for that. If it gets to a situation where they have to maybe get creative, play games in neutral sites, really change the landscape of a season, but still at least get some baseball in where they play without fans, but can continue to at least collect on the TV side, they're going to do whatever they can to try to not just make this a lost season and cancel it altogether. So what they did with this agreement is they basically said, look, we're probably not playing in, well, we're definitely not playing in April. We're almost definitely not going to play in May too. I mean, I can't see any scenario where that happens. So they have money now that they're sending to the players to stay home, to keep them afloat, and then they're going to have to revisit things if the season has to be canceled or whatnot. Obviously, if they're playing a shortened season, then comes the salaries. Are they prorated based on games that are played? There's a lot of other variables that, as far as I've seen, haven't really been fully reported yet, but this is a good thing for them in the short term to kind of kick the can down the road a little bit. Now, this deal also is really big for the players when it comes to service time, and that is how this agreement came together. Because you know what? There's a chance now the owners are not going to pay the players on the back end, but they are going to credit all the players a full year of service time no matter what. So for a player like Yoenis Cespedes, he could be a free agent after this year, even if baseball's not played. Marcus Stroman, same thing. Can you imagine that scenario where the Mets made a trade, they sent two prospects to the Toronto Blue Jays, and they only get, what was it, 10, 11, 12 starts out of Stroman off of that trade? I think that would be great incentive right there to make sure that you sign Stroman to a contract extension to avoid the optics of basically throwing two prospects away. So that is another interesting layer to this that every team is going to have to negotiate. Jacob DeGrom's contract, same thing. So there's a lot of different layers to that. So hopefully we still get baseball this year and none of that really comes into play. But for the players, that is a big victory. If the season is played but shortened, they also said that arbitration eligible players are not going to be penalized based on the counting stats. So if going into arbitration where it's a player versus the team and they go to court, obviously those numbers, if it's a closer and they have 45 saves, that's going to really boost their leverage in those negotiations. Now, essentially, what they're probably going to just do is kind of just take whatever sample size they have and maximize that for a full season for whatever player if there is arbitration cases after this year. So that's another layer to this. Finally, what major league owners got out of this deal was the right to shorten the upcoming draft to just 5 rounds. They aren't going to do that for sure just yet, but they have the option to do so. So basically, you're looking at the upper echelon of players, whether it's high school seniors, the top college players that would still be able to get drafted, and you still get to replenish your farm system in some ways. But when you're talking about what was, I don't even know, 40 plus round draft, where you have to pay signing bonuses to all those players, that's going to significantly save the MLB owners money. I think I talked about this on an earlier podcast last week or before that. You also have the option now in 2021 for the owners to shorten the draft to 20 rounds. And so this is kind of a rare circumstance because essentially the players agreed to this deal. And in some ways, it doesn't really affect them because basically, why is a player going to turn down that option? Oh, so you're just going to bring less players into the league that could compete for my job? I mean, sure, they are all future members of the Players Association that the current players are basically neglecting by accepting that term to the deal where they're shortening the draft pool. But, I mean, that's not really their problem. And if that's what the owners really wanted to do, and that's a big way for them to save money, and that's how you get the service time carrot, of course that deal is going to get ratified. So that is basically the bottom line. You have players now getting paid to stay quarantined for the next couple of months. Everyone is motivated to get this season back going. If possible, the owners can shorten the draft and not have to pay that money, and the players are getting their service time no matter what. In just a minute, I'm going to talk about Pete Alonso and whether he might go through a sophomore slump if the season is played. But first, do you hate stepping on the scale? Maybe it's because you haven't met the right one. A company called Withings produced the world's first smart scale, and they are still the best. In fact, Tom's Guide rated Withings Body Plus the best overall smart scale of 2020. If you're looking to lose weight, willpower is key, but so is having the right tools. Withings smart scales are known for durability and an exceptional user-friendly design. Step on and data from every weigh-in syncs automatically to the free app for iOS and Android via Wi-Fi or Bluetooth. Lots of smart scales don't have the Wi-Fi option, and it means you need to have your phone on you. But Withings Body Plus gives weight, full body composition, weight trend, even a local weather report. This scale can support up to 8 users and even knows who's who. So here's the deal. You can get 25% off a Withings Body Plus right now at withings.com for a very limited time. Go to withings.com at withings.com/MLB to get 25% off your Body Plus body composition scale. That's withings.com/MLB to get 25% off your Body Plus body composition scale. So Pete Alonso is going into his sophomore season after winning the NL Rookie of the Year, and I got this question from a listener named RJ asking about his upcoming season.
I wanted to ask why the MLB thinks that Pete Alonso will only be hitting 39 home runs in this next season.
Big shout out to RJ for leaving the voicemail. If any of you want to ask me a question to get played on the show, please call at 347-395-1647. And I think his question is interesting because when you look at the projections on Pete Alonso's season, and this was when they were thinking he was going to play, obviously a full slate of 162 games, no one has him hitting 53 home runs again or even getting 120 RBIs. Everyone is projecting a slight dip in the numbers for him to go down to 39 home runs, as he mentioned. Some have him at 42. A lot of them have the RBIs around 105. So people do not think that Alonso can be quite as good as he was as a rookie in his sophomore year. And I think part of that is that projections generally are going to be a little more cautious, and they're going to look at the 53 home runs as an outlier, especially last year with the way the balls were flying out of the yard across the league. At the same time, does that mean that Pete Alonso is going to go through a slump? I mean, is there a history of rookie of the years struggling in their second year? Well, I looked at the most recent history because since Jacob deGrom won the NL Rookie of the Year in 2014, the last five Rookie of the Years have all been position players. First, you had Chris Bryant. He won the Rookie of the Year in 2015. The next year, he won an MVP. So I'd say that Chris Bryant did just fine. He also helped lead the Cubs to a World Series victory. In his second season, he improved his home run total by 13. More RBIs. The batting average went up. On base percentage, slugging, everything went up. So Chris Bryant was better in his second year than his first. So if Alonso got to play a full season, maybe he would have hit 60. Who knows? You go down to Corey Seager, who won the Rookie of the Year in 2016, and he's got an interesting case because you may forget that 2015, Seager comes up, plays 27 games down the stretch for the Dodgers, was then the starting shortstop for the Dodgers when they played the Mets in the NLDS. I almost don't even look at him as a rookie in that next season. Luckily for him, he didn't have too much service time. He was eligible to win the award. He did just that. The next year, he really had a pretty identical season. Was an all-star both as a rookie and a second-year player. He had a third-year, but second-year player. Played less games that year. Still had close to the same amount of home runs, more RBIs, a little bit less doubles. You look at the slash line, his batting average went down about 10 points. His on-base percentage went up 10 points, though, so he was a little more selective. The slugging percentage did go down about 30, 40 points, but overall, very similar player each year. His teammate, Cody Bellinger, wins the Rookie of the Year the next year in 2017. And here's your one real example of a little bit of a sophomore slump. As a rookie, sensational. 39 home runs, 97 RBIs, and just 132 games played. 933 OPS. His OPS plus, which is similar to weighted runs created plus, was 143. He even got some MVP votes as a rookie. The next year, he plays the entire season, all 162, but the OPS went down over 100 points. His OPS plus was 120 as opposed to 143. 14 less home runs, 21 less RBIs. So he definitely saw a little bit of a slump. But then we saw in year three last year, best player in the National League, wins the MVP, wins the Gold Glove, wins the Silver Slugger, was outstanding. Finally, you have Ronald Acuna Jr., who went from a 143 OPS plus as a rookie when he won the award to a 122 OPS plus the next year. So if you want to get really technical, maybe he was slightly better as a rookie than he was in 2019 when he was an all-star. But I mean, look at all the other numbers. And the other numbers to me tell me that Acuna was better in his second year. He did play 45 less games. If you just go on extra base hits alone, which is what kind of skews some of these other stats like the slugging percentage, the OPS to OPS plus, because he had 26 doubles in 111 games as a rookie and only had 22 doubles the following season. So you look at just extra base hits as a whole, and he had 13 less in 2019, but he also increased his home run total. He had 41 home runs, 101 RBIs, 37 stolen bases to lead the league. He led the league in plate appearances, runs, and stolen bases, as I mentioned. So I look at that, and I can't say that's a sophomore slump for Acuña Jr. And even if you go back to Bellinger, I mean, he still had a good year. So overall, what I will say is this. Dating back to Jacob deGrom and up till now, all of the Rookie of the Years in the National League have panned out to be among the best players in baseball. Winning that award usually indicates a great career ahead of you. This year, Pete Alonso, I'm sure he probably isn't going to match the stats, but the stats obviously aren't going to matter due to the coronavirus. We're not going to get a full slate of a season where you can say, you know, Alonso hit whatever plateau or milestone, the 30 home runs, the 40 home runs. All of that is going to have to be kind of thrown out the window. When I look at the stats that really measure a player's value, like the Wade Runs Created Plus for Pete Alonso, which was 143 last year, I don't see any reason why he can't come in this season and for whatever many games he gets to play, match that. And I think the bottom line with Pete Alonso is he is going to bring you that great leadership that we see even during these times as he's reaching out to doctors around the country to put a smile on their face who are on the front lines fighting this thing. He is just an incredible person and a player, and I'm sure that there is nothing but success in his future with the New York Mets. Anyway, that'll be all for today's edition of Locked On Mets. I just spoke with Brian Wright, the author of the New York Mets All-Time All-Stars, about his book. As I said, we're doing a little bit of a quarantine book club, so you can find that book on Amazon. Just search Brian Wright, New York Mets. You can probably just find it that way. And on this episode, which will be probably a two-parter that I'll play on Tuesday and Wednesday, unless some breaking news drops, we go through the best pitchers in Mets history. So we'll talk about Tom Seaver, Dwight Gooden, Jacob deGrom. We cover it all. It is a really fun conversation. Looking forward to playing that for you over the coming days. Also, if you want to get some more great baseball content, check out the Locked On MLB podcast, which airs every day right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. All you have to do to find the show is tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB.